Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, March the 2nd. And today we're going to be talking a little bit with our friend Michael Bargo up in the Windy City of Chicago. We're going to be talking about sanctuary cities. There was a very interesting opinion that was issued by a federal court basically supporting the Trump administration on their views on sanctuary cities. And also something that I think caught many of us by surprise was President Trump's decision to commute the sentence of former Governor Blago of Illinois, a man who, of course, had been put in jail following the controversy of selling Barack Obama's seat in 2008 when then-Senator Obama was elected President of the United States. So we're going to talk a little bit about both of those today. Let me say hello to our friend Michael. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing great, Silvio. It's good to talk to you again.
My pleasure. It's great to have you. And we're going to talk about two very interesting topics. But before we do, the last 24 hours, last 48 hours, have been pretty interesting on the front as far as politics, at least the Democrat side of the equation. You probably know by now that Amy Klobuchar has dropped out, so has Mayor Pete. And apparently both of them are headed to Texas, where they will be share the stage tonight with Vice President Biden in some kind of a ceremony down here. So that's the latest from the Democrats. What do you make of it? What was your reaction to both of those candidates dropping out and endorsing Vice President Biden, Michael?
Obviously, the Democrats are very fearful of the possibility that Bernie Sanders may become their candidate. So they engage in negotiations with Buttigieg and Klobuchar to immediately throw their hands up, give in, and encourage all of their supporters to support Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the idea. I suppose both of them are maybe positioning themselves for potentially a vice presidency, a call to be vice president. Certainly, I think Senator Klobuchar probably has a better chance because she's a woman. But how would you analyze the Democrat race? You know, here we have Super Tuesday tomorrow. Super Tuesday should be very good for Bernie Sanders. I mean, how do you analyze it right now? I know we haven't seen the votes from Super Tuesday, but how do you look at it right now?
Well, Bernie Sanders has a lot of support because, paradoxically, he is living on the old liberal programs of supporting everybody with government taxation and spending. But then Joe Biden is also kind of the old traditional guy. And I think with Joe Biden, since his son got money from China, and remember, got some money from the Ukraine, was involved in that. There's more of a foreign policy influence issue with Joe Biden, don't you think?
Yeah, I would think. I know what you're saying. I think you're right. I think in many ways, impeachment probably hurt Joe Biden more than it hurt President. President Trump, but it is interesting to me that when I look at the situation right now, Michael, I see more and more likely the idea that nobody gets to the convention with the nomination or the delegates, And then it's all going to be settled right there in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, not far from you. And what happens on the floor, you know, we haven't seen one of these since 1952, so we don't really have any personal experience. We saw what happened in 68.
Yeah.
And that was...
Which reminds me of 68, totally, because, as you may recall, up for a long time, the Democrat Party, and probably the Republican, too, had been deciding as a... through the National Party organization, who their candidate would be. And then in 1968, a lot of, you know, the hippies and yippies and anti-Vietnam War protesters were protesting the smoke-filled room idea. And they're trying to bring back the smoke-filled room that the party establishment does not want Bernie Sanders, probably because they think he would lose to Trump, because Bernie Sanders does not conflict with traditional Democrat Party principles and programs.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I think a lot of them agree with Bernie on many issues. They just don't think he can win, which is why I think they're maybe going for, you know, as they like to say, the more traditional, the more moderate candidate. But I don't know. I think their biggest problem, frankly, is that they don't have an economy to run on, and they don't really have any. There's no excitement for Joe Biden. I know there's going to be a lot of excitement tonight, but I just don't. I don't see that excitement. Let's just say I don't see that excitement in the ranks for Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden. It's almost like, well, he's next in line and he's the best we got. But I don't see a lot of excitement for him in the ranks, Michael.
No, but what they might be thinking is they don't need excitement. Remember, Barack Obama was an absolute nobody with no history of legislation or national. He's never had a national scene. They figured if they can push him to the forefront and get him elected president, that they may have that kind of national influence, because they control all the media, to push Joe Biden into the spotlight again and get him elected.
Yeah. Well, I think their strategy is basically a turnout strategy. You know, they got to get the numbers that Barack Obama got. And if they can get those kinds of numbers, then I think there's a fighting chance. Now, whether 2020 is going to look like 2012 or 2008 rather than 2016, I guess time will tell. But I see a lot of excitement on the Republican side as well. So maybe both sides are going to have a heavy turnout, Michael. But I don't see how they, you know, all I can say is that if they get to Milwaukee and no one has the nomination, I don't see how they deny it to Bernie Sanders.
Well, I thought that in 68. And they've been doing some shy. I understand with you completely. If he's real close to winning the correct number of delegates, I don't see how they can do it either. But you got to realize these people, the people who run the Democrat Party, are very totalitarian, and they feel they are really in charge, and they really don't care what the rank and file thinks. And one other thing I want to bring up is because of the economic success of President Trump's policies, you have to realize there are 21 million people who are government employees today who are part of public sector unions. And in CalPERS alone, when the stock market really increased, their investments increased by 40%. That's a huge amount. So those who are in public sector unions and are only looking for their future in retirement and the stability of their pension system would definitely vote for Donald Trump, because I know these people personally, and that's all they think about. And then there's the blacks, too. President Trump has greatly increased the jobs numbers for blacks and, I would say, Hispanics and other minorities.
Mm-hmm.
And he has also he's enormously improved their situation and given them a lot of respect. And I think a big mistake the Democrats made was allowing so many blacks in black areas who were selling drugs to be incarcerated for many years for selling pot or distributing marijuana or whatever. And President Trump reversed it. The Democrats should have been smart and reversed that. I think that hurts his vote. That hurts the Democrats' viability among Democrat voters and helps Trump.
No, I think so. And I think that is really the, you know, to me, that's kind of like the wild card. 2020, and that is how President Trump does with Hispanics and with African Americans. Because, I mean, look, he was at got 9% of the vote in 2016 and 27% Hispanic. So he doesn't really have to, you know, he doesn't have to make huge increases. But I mean, let's say he takes the black vote to, let's say, 33-34%. And I've seen polls that show him higher than that with black men. And let's say he takes the Hispanic vote, that is, the 35, the black vote, let's say, to 15 or 16%. He does that, and he's, you know, he's going to be much better. And even in states like Illinois or Ohio or Michigan, states with where, you know, that turnover in the black vote could win some close elections. Well, we're going to see how it all develops, but a very interesting developments here in the last 24, 48 hours on the Democrat side, and we'll see what happens with Super Tuesday. I think it's going to be a good day for Bernie Sanders, but we'll see when the votes are counted. I mean, here in Texas, Bernie Sanders is leading substantially on the Democrat side, and they've had a heavy turnout. They had a good turnout here in Texas. The Democrat turnout is going to be pretty good. But then they have a presidential primary, and they have a U.S. Senate race also. So they have reasons to turn out. I mean, there's nothing going on the Republican side. I mean, there's no serious contest or anything like that. So you don't expect a lot of turnout. Well, let's talk about the two issues that are on the agenda. One is sanctuary cities. There was an opinion by a judge here recently, not by a judge, actually a court, two out of three judges agreeing with President Trump, and that has to do with sanctuary cities. And I have never seen this issue of sanctuary cities. For me, it's pretty simple to understand. I mean, how can you have a country where a city decides what law they're going to obey? I mean, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Not only that, Silvio, but what's remarkable about these things that we often discuss is that this all comes from Chicago. The city of Chicago was the first city to have its mayor declare it a sanctuary city. That was in 1985. It was Executive Order 85-1, done by the first black president, Mayor Harold Washington. It was followed later in the year by New York City's Mayor Dinkins making it a sanctuary, too. So it's remarkable, Sylvia, how Chicago is still like the nuclear core of all this stuff. And Hillary's probably controlling a lot of the strings to get Joe Biden in the convention. And Obama is from Chicago. It's really astounding that all the big issues, Biden, Obama, Hillary, and sanctuary and immigration are all were coming from Chicago.
Yeah, no, that is fascinating. You're exactly right. Chicago, in many ways, is really the cradle of so much of this stuff. Now, I think this is pretty much it for sanctuary cities. If it goes to the Supreme Court, I expect the Supreme Court to uphold this decision. So I think this is pretty much it for sanctuary cities. I think you'll see the Trump administration make a big issue out of it in the campaign. They should. And this is an issue that to me, this is one that people can understand. I mean, as I said before, I've never been able to understand why you're going to support a city that decides that they're not going to support, let's say, a particular immigration law. What happens if a city says we're not going to obey another law, Michael?
The sanctuary thing is, I've written a lot about that, perhaps more than anybody. The sanctuary thing is very easy to understand. We have in our country, we have a democracy, and a number of people vote for their members of Congress. The old district of Luis Gutierrez in Chicago is now run by Chuy Garcia, who challenged Rahm Emanuel to be mayor, and he almost won. So they continue to have very, very highly gerrymandered congressional districts. And here's the important fact. The city of Chicago today, this is the Census Bureau, has less people than it had in 1920. And this is remarkable. I just recently checked this. The city of Chicago has the same limit since 1890, and it has now the number of white people in Chicago, Silvio, is less than it had in 1890.
Wow, amazing.
That's why they're desperate to have illegal immigrants here, not just from, south of the border, but Russians, Polish, all kinds of, all from all over the world. Obama brought in people from all over.
Yeah. No, I think that you're right. That is their strategy. But I just don't think this is a winning issue for them, because every poll that I've ever seen, Americans, I think Americans figure out that you cannot have cities that basically say we're not going to obey immigration law. And in this particular case, what is interesting about this issue is that honestly they're not rounding up illegal immigrants they're basically rounding up criminals, people engaging in criminal activity. That's who they're rounding up. And
not
so
that,
these criminals represent a threat to their communities, Michael.
Right. Not only that, but I think it makes law-abiding Hispanic people who applied legally for immigration, who followed all the rules, I think it makes them very, very disillusioned and angry that these other criminals are being given precedence.
That's right. No, you're exactly right, and I hear that. I hear that when I talk to people. But I do think this victory in the court is probably – this is probably it. I don't think there will be any more challenges, because – I don't see this thing going any further. I don't believe the Supreme Court is going to reverse it. So I think this stays the way it is, as a big victory for President Trump. Funny. Let me just say this thing. It's not just a victory for President Trump. It's a victory for the rule of law. I'm talking about the opinion on sanctuary cities, Michael.
Are you talking about the Second Circuit Court of Appeals?
Yeah, the most recent one,
I printed that in preparation for our talk. I printed that this week and carefully studied it, and it basically says that you know what the same thing you think. It laid down a lot, you know, like 40 pages explaining that immigration law is a federal issue, and when they give them grant money, the money has to be by receiving the money, they make an agreement to spend the money the way they're told to by the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no,
so
I agree.
They've been taking federal grant money for their police departments, tens of millions of dollars in New York City, for example, and then they spend it any way they darn please, and they just thumb their nose at the law.
Right. No, I think you're exactly right on that, and that's why this is a tough opinion. It's a good opinion, and one that I think will have consequences, because I think the Trump administration is going to go after many of these cities, and in particular, they're going to make a huge campaign issue out of this, and they should. They should make a campaign issue out of this. This is totally wrong on the part of these cities. Let me take a little break, Michael. When we come back,
sure.
We'll continue our chat, and we're also going to be talking about Governor Blago. You remember him? Well, he's been in the news recently. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, March the 2nd, chatting with our friend Michael Bargo up in Chicago. A couple of stories that we're talking about today is the whole issue of sanctuary cities and a federal court opinion that I think pretty much ended this debate in favor of President Trump. It's not just a victory for President Trump. It's actually a victory for the rule of law. And so I think that was a major issue. The other one that we were talking about, or we're going to talk about right now, is this whole question of Governor, and I call him Blago because I can never remember how to say his whole name, Michael. How do you say his whole name again?
His the way they say it here in Chicago is Blagojevich.
Blagojevich, that's it, Blagojevich. What is that, Polish by any chance?
Yeah, it's definitely Slavic.
Okay.
So
all right.
It might be Polish or Czech or something, some part of Europe like that.
Well, what's interesting is that when this guy first came, he's been in the news for a long time, of course, being governor of Illinois, an important state. But when he first made the news back at the end of 2008 regarding the sale of Senator Obama's seat, when I first took a look at him on the screen, I had not seen much of him, but I took a look at him. I said, man, this guy reminds me, I don't know if you remember Jerry and the Pacemakers. a group from the 1960s. They all used to comb their hair. They all used to comb their hair exactly like Blago. And so I thought, oh my God, you know, Jerry and the Pacemakers are back in the news. But then that was it. Of course, his hair was black then. Now it's completely white after spending a little bit of time in jail. But he was not pardoned. Correct me if I'm wrong. He was not pardoned, but his sentence was commuted, which is a totally different legal standard. I mean, pardon is when they basically say, okay, as you know, when you pardon, basically they erase everything. In this case, you know, everything stays except he's not in jail as long as he was supposed to be. Now, I have to tell you, Michael, when we spoke off the air the other day, I mentioned that I was blindsided by this because I really didn't expect it. I mean, the idea that this man would be commuted is something that I did not expect President Trump to do. So I then began to speculate, saying, well, what was the motive? And then there was a very interesting article that was published. I think it was PJ Media Very interesting article that speculated a little bit of how this may have a connection to the Senator Obama or President Obama, and not a good one to say the least. So what was your reaction to this whole Blago thing? Just give me your reaction. I mean, like, first of all, your initial reaction, and then we'll talk about what it means.
I was originally shocked by it. I'm thinking, how can President Trump, who talks about obeying the law and who is anti-Democrat Party, be doing this giant favor for former Governor Blagojevich? And other people I personally know and talk to were also shocked by it. But then after you discussed this issue with me, I looked up an article that Blago wrote himself for Newsmax. And it's stunning that, I can't prove anything because I don't have any inside information. But it looks. But I know that he talked to Trump's people in prison before his sentence was commuted. And he wrote an article. This is Blago's own article, and it pretty much explains why he in other words, in this article, he's talking about impeachment, and it explains why he's returning the favor of President Trump shortening his sentence. Keep in mind that there's still a two-year period now of probation, and if Blago doesn't behave himself, he can be sent back to prison.
Yeah. So for the benefit of people who may not remember what happened, let me explain it, and please correct me if I'm wrong or fill in the blanks if I'm leaving anything out. But what happened was Senator Obama was elected. Obviously, he was going to have to be replaced. As senator from Illinois, and I think he had 2 years left because he was elected in 2004, so he still had 2 years on his six-year term. So Governor Blago now has the responsibility of replacing or filling that seat, and he was basically boasting in a recorded interview, not realizing, of course, he was being recorded. He was boasting about, you know, using it to make some money or to get some favors, or, you know, he felt that he had something valuable in his hands filling the seat. And that's when it became controversial because he was heard on a recording saying that. Did I present this pretty much the way it is or the way it was?
Exactly. I think it was probably the FBI who were recording his phone calls at that time. They had 19 counts against Blagojevich, and that was only one of them. In another one, he was working with another crooked guy named Cellini, who had connections in the Springfield State Capitol, and Cellini got a hold of I think over $200 million of teacher retirement fund money. Most of that coming out of the paychecks of the teachers themselves, and he invested it with some other characters, and most of the money was, they say, lost, quote-unquote, in bad real estate investments. So that who knows where that money where that money went, probably in offshore accounts, as other money has. But you're absolutely correct. But the thing about the second part of the issue is, why did Trump pardon him? Is there a quid pro quo? And this thing I've read over the past few days is an article in Newsmax that Blago himself wrote. And then what he did was he actually wrote maybe like 1,400 words saying how outrageous it was to impeach, to attempt to impeach President Trump. He was defending President Trump from the impeachment accusations, and this was written back, I think, in January 1st, and so where there was still, you know, a strong impeachment feeling in the country. So possibly, I can only speculate because I don't have direct evidence, but the quid pro quo was President Trump commuted the sentence, and then Blago came out and defended President Trump against the impeachment.
Okay, so you think that's all there is to this? You don't think that that there is potentially information that Blago gave up that could hurt President Obama?
He can be, I would say, more likely, well, not just him, but a number of other people. And as you may recall, in January of 2019, the United States Justice Department indicted Ed Burke. Ed Burke, who was the most powerful alderman on the Chicago Finance Committee in the Chicago City Council. And they're going after they also went after Governor Pritzker, and they also went after Michael Madigan, who's the Speaker of the House. And there may be – I don't have proof of this yet, but it's interesting to find out. I did hear him make some remarks on TV about he knows a lot about the Chicago machine and the Democrats in Springfield. So he may be offering firsthand information for testimony in future cases.
Right. Well, he may be, he may be providing leads that could lead the FBI to maybe start taping a few other conversations of Democrat politicians. So was Blago, sort of looking back at this, was Blago disappointed, you think, that he didn't get this commutation from President Obama? Or, you know, was it realistic for President Obama to even get involved? Everybody would have suspected some kind of foul play or arrangement if, let's say, President Obama had done this. Let's say President Obama had commuted his sentence. I'm sure there'd be a lot of people like me who would be screaming at Obama, wouldn't we?
You're right. I think that's correct. I think at the time, the evidence against Blagojevich was so great. You have to realize there's 19 counts, and they only got him on small things in about 14. They didn't get him on some of the big stuff. And there was just so much here. It would have looked bad for President Obama at the beginning of his presidency to allow Blagojevich out of prison.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it would have been. I think. I mean, I think we have to be honest and say that people like me and I'm assuming people like you would have been screaming corruption. You know, we would have been screaming some kind of an arrangement between President Obama and Blago. But, you know, again, I have to confess that I was very surprised when President Trump did it. Does it go anywhere beyond just maybe finding out some information about the deep state, if you will, in Illinois politics, Michael?
You just took those two words out of my mouth. Deep state. I was going to say that. May lead to, Silvio, and probably will, is, you know how now the Justice Department is going after deep state people who went after President Trump. This may be Blago and the people they find out about through him may be the biggest scandal in Chicago history, and one of the biggest, if not the biggest, in American history regarding a big city.
Yeah, well, look, I think that people like me from the outside, I mean, you live there, so you know it better than anybody else, but from the outside, Chicago has always looked and has always smelled very corrupt. I think it is a city that is run very poorly, and I think the people of Chicago are being harmed by the way that city is run. So I think if any cleaning up took place, I wouldn't be upset, and I don't think most people in Chicago would be upset either, Michael.
Well, we have people in middle-class neighborhoods. Let me give you an example. I know a guy who he doesn't live in a luxury neighborhood. He lives in an average middle-class area. Mm-hmm. His house, I told him, I said, you know, you better move. I said, the property taxes in Chicago are skyrocketing. They're the highest in the country. And he goes, well, I don't know, isn't it? So he had his house appraised. It was appraised by an official licensed appraiser for $349,000, which is not outrageous, right? But get this, Silvio. At the time I talked to him, his taxes on the 349 house were already $13,600 a year. And after a couple months after I warned him to sell his house because the taxes are skyrocketing, his taxes went up from $13,600 to $25,000 a year for a middle-class house.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's like having a job just to pay the property tax.
Yeah, and then there's all these other taxes, too. Illinois has a 10% sales tax. I mean, Chicago does on everything. And then there's a number of other cases. They have 13 taxes on an electric bill for a home. A three-bedroom house has 13 taxes on its electric bill and 7 on its natural gas bill. A gallon of gasoline has 7 taxes on it.
Out of curiosity, what is the cost of gasoline in your area right now?
I just got it for $2.69, and that's a good price.
Yeah. That is a good price. We're paying between $1.95 and $2.05. That's what a price of a gallon of regular runs around here. But I've always felt, and it really goes beyond partisan politics, Democrat or Republicans, but I've always felt that the Windy City, the very historic city of Chicago, very much an important city in the development of the country. So many great immigrants came there and made such great strides in that city. The city right now is just very poorly run. And you were saying the words deep state, one that I like is regime change. I think the city of Chicago and a lot of these big cities could really use regime change. I really do. I think the people of those cities could really use a whole new cast of characters running the city, Michael.
I would go further and make it more detailed. What they really need to reform in Chicago and Illinois are the pensions.
Today,
if you just look at Illinois state pensions, you may not believe this, Silvio, but this is from the Illinois state budget itself. The Illinois state budget is like $36.5 billion. One-fourth of the whole budget, almost $9 billion, goes only to state pensions, not to people who are working.
See, it's just unsustainable. I mean, at some point,
of course,
at some point that will cause – I mean, California is not that far behind. California
is worse in the long run because it's much bigger. But
much bigger
it's got
problem,
over three times the people. And there are – I actually post this on Facebook. I put up a list of San Francisco County. The county health director makes $350,000 a year.
Wow.
And then gets free health care and dental and retirement perks and all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I said, it's a great job if you can find it. But it's also not a good deal for the people who are basically paying for this, which is all the taxpayers. Yeah,
it's a violation of the Constitution.
And that's, by the way, if we could take a minute about that, that's your lawsuit, isn't it? That's what you are challenging in a lawsuit that you're working on, right?
Well, I had that one now. I don't want to talk about the current lawsuit I have because it's actually just starting in federal court.
Right.
But, I did 3.5 years ago submit a lawsuit all the way to the Supreme Court, which didn't go through there. It wasn't considered. But I'm gonna submit that again. That the pensions are unconstitutional. Not only do they tax us without our consent, which these are the basic arguments for us starting the whole United States, was that the King of Great Britain imposes taxes without our consent, and we have no say in what our taxes are. And not only that, my argument is since we vote for Congress every 2 years, the Constitution says no appropriation of money by Congress can last more than 1 year. Only the Army, and that's 2 years. So nothing, no money can be spent that has more than a 2 year length of time. But they do it.
Yeah.
You know, they spend money for 30. They spend people get a pension for a lifetime, and it's outrageous.
That's right. Well, the only good news, if I could put it that way, is that it is unsustainable. And
it's
at some
apart.
Point, yeah, at some point it's going to hit the fan, as they say.
Well,
and
it's starting
when that,
to because. I've been writing about this on Facebook. That's why I spread a lot of stuff. I heard a guy on Wall Street on one of these big business shows. He said that Wall Street is no longer buying Illinois bonds, which they use to pay bills so they can divert money into pensions.
Right. No, I mean, and look at the number of people leaving the state. I mean, there's an exodus of people leaving the state. So it is an unsustainable situation, and that might be the best short-term news that we have, but it's going to be painful, as you say, for the people who are expecting what they may not be getting down the road. Well, Michael, as always, thank you for your time. Let's catch up again maybe in a little bit after Super Tuesday. And when is the Illinois primary? It's not tomorrow.
I'm not sure.
I think
it's in April. Pardon?
It's not
Super Tuesday. I don't think it's
Tuesday. Tomorrow. No, I don't think it's tomorrow either.
No. Well, I don't vote in the Democrat Party. I vote Republican now. But
yeah.
We do
no,
have
but
an
I know,
election
but,
coming up.
But maybe when we get closer to the Illinois primary, we can get together again and chat about the politics and some of these other issues as well, Michael.
Well, Super Tuesday will be gigantic. Whatever happens then, if Biden looks weak then, and Bernie looks very strong, that'll be very significant.
I think so. I think so. I think that it's pretty much, as I say, in not quite 24 hours, I guess, but maybe 48 hours, we'll have an entirely different landscape. And it could be one of those where Bernie looks really, really good, or one where Biden surprises people on Tuesday, potentially Bloomberg, and then it gets all more confusing. But I'm beginning to think they're going to get to the convention. I really believe this. They're going to get to the convention without a nominee, and then all hell breaks
right.
loose in Milwaukee. Just make sure that your fire hose is ready, because the burning may reach Chicago.
It's going to be. I'm afraid. Although Bernie Sanders, the concept of socialism and social programs is actually unconstitutional. It's absolutely unconstitutional. There's no room for benefits or anything in the Constitution. But he's gaining a lot of traction. You know, we're going to spend everybody into oblivion. So it's going to be interesting to see if the socialism starts to die, and if Bernie is defeated, and I agree with you, they'll probably give him the axe at the convention. If he gets defeated, it will be because the old guard of the Democrat National Committee doesn't want him in.
Well, I told an old friend, I'll leave you with this thought. I told an old Democrat friend, and he agreed with me, actually, that the best thing that could happen for the Democrat Party is to get wiped out in November,
right.
Because that will then open the door for a more centrist Democrat Party, who I think will be far more competitive a lot sooner. Because a lot of these Democrats are traditional Democrats. They're not really into all this socialism, and they have been pushed aside by Bernie and by Elizabeth Warren and people like that. So I think, if they lose big, that could very well be the biggest. Look at what happened to the Republicans with Barry Goldwater. Everybody predicted the end of the party, and in fact, it won 7 of the next 10 elections after Barry Goldwater defeat. So, you never know. But I think the Democrats are better off going back to the center. But I'm not sure they have a candidate right now. Even though centrist, I'm not sure any of them is really capable of beating President Trump. I think it's going to take 2024 for that to happen, for them
right.
to have somebody that can compete. Michael, have a wonderful day, and thank you for your time, as always. And
yeah,
stay in touch, and we'll continue doing these.
Yeah, we'll have. It'll be interesting to see in 2 days, but what the results are tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll see. I as I said, I'm predicting a good one for Bernie, but I could be wrong.
One more thought to leave you and your listeners with. In 2016,
sure.
Every poll in the United States and all the media polls predicted that Hillary would win, and they were all wrong.
That's right. I remember that. I remember being on the air. I was invited by Telemundo on election day, and I went to the station to talk about the election. And at 6:30, 7 o'clock Central Time, it was a done deal for Hillary. It started changing about 8:30 or 9 o'clock, but it was a done deal.
Their power to manipulate the elections ended then.
That's right. No, I agree. I agree with you.
All right.
I agree
good to talk to you. Take care.
Thank you, my friend, Michael Bargo, up in the Windy City, our good friend up there. And he is always up to speed on many of these issues. And this whole story about Blago, the governor, when I heard about that story, the first person that I thought about was Michael. I said, I bet Michael has something interesting to say about that. And, of course, Sanctuary City's a big story up in Chicago as well. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Cantu in Dallas. And we will do some shows about Super Tuesday. Just hang in there, and I'll line up some guests for that. Bye-bye, everybody.